What is up, folks? It is Tuesday, December 20, 2011, and it is the last show of the year. Welcome to Inside the Game. As you can see, we've come with full representation this week. Just Jeff and I actually are just here this week. What's up, guys? Jeff, how's it going out in the Northwest right now? We had a wrestle with technology to the show just to get it to start. God, technology is awesome, isn't it?
One of the ever-going conundrums that is me is that I spend, you know, anywhere from 12 to 15 hours out of the day in front of a computer, on a computer, whatever, doing something with a computer. But then when it comes to troubleshooting very basic issues that many of the fine listeners for the show we have, their grandmothers could handle this stuff better than I could. Like, what ended up happening, and I shit you not, and this is, I say this just to give people the idea of the gravity of how bad I am at this. Couldn't get Skype to work. I'm hearing sounds. Wheat's talking. I'm not hearing a damn thing he's saying. It ended up being that for whatever reason, Skype auto-adjusted the volume from my webcam on my laptop, which I don't typically use, to zero. So I could hear the ringer, but I couldn't hear anything that was coming out of it. So that took me about 30 minutes to figure out. So I apologize. You know what, though? I'm probably always going to be this bad. I'm probably always going to be this bad with technology. So I apologize, but come to expect it, please, so you can make me feel less bad.
Hey, you know what? That's why they made USB so easy, man. Just so that
That's right. You
don't have to be a tech whiz to be a gamer. You just plug that shit in and play. But we're light. We don't have Pain User. We don't have Idra tonight. This is a bit unexpected, so our apologies. We are going to kind of go ahead with the show, and maybe some things we won't get as in-depth into as we would have, but we're just going to talk a little bit about 2011 as we come to a close. A lot of things coming to a close, some of them, of course, continuing in 2012, some of them ending, including our good buddy Slasher's show on MLG TV. Today is going to be the last day that that's going to be appearing over there, so Slasher, we wish you the best of luck. Let's talk about some other stuff 2012 or 11 related, because I have a whole list of things that I came up with that I want to talk about for 2011. In Control, you know, you've been playing Brood War on the WCG circuit, you know, obviously online and offline competitions, and you've seen the ups and the downs of esports as it relates specifically to StarCraft. And you know, I have similar backgrounds in seeing like the rise and the fall of leagues and competitions and whatnot. And I think I can firmly say, and it makes me very happy to declare this, that there's no doubt about it in my history that I have been a part of esports and competitive gaming, that 2011 was the best year that I've ever seen.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't necessarily, we could get into semantics and say, well, the money, you know, comparatively. I'm talking about everything from exposure to knowledge to evolution to not making the same mistakes to the actual game that's being played to the players. I feel like all of these things, like you can't necessarily weigh one thing over the other, because I could certainly say it wasn't the best year for prize money, but it was the best year for everything else.
I hope the gravity of that assists with people too, because again, I think one of the interesting things that needs to be hopefully not forever brought up, but it's the double-edged sword. I'm saying this the most confusing way possible. Basically, we have so many new fans for StarCraft II that there's a lot of people that don't know the history of gaming and StarCraft specifically, but really some of the people that are involved in StarCraft, like yourself. So I hope this doesn't come off as beating them over the head or something like that. But what I want to say is Wheat's been around for a long time in esports, since, as far as I'm concerned, the very beginning of it becoming more of a, less of a hobby, more of something you could travel and do and justify, you know? I don't want to call it a pro game just yet. Like, the early Quake and Counter-Strike players, I don't necessarily know that they would call themselves, like, true pro gamers, you know?
I won money playing Quake 3, so I considered myself a pro gamer. I think that's fair to say. Like, I had expenses, I went and competed, we won money, and that, you know, that technically, by the terms of making money, you know, qualifies. So,
well, let me say this then. I guess the like asterisk that I would put to that, the caveat, because I would have called myself a pro gamer too, But in the, I think in gaming, we have like a different standard for I'm a professional at this.
Of course.
Certainly the further back
it's
you go.
Evolved.
Like you didn't come home and like whisk mini weed off his feet and say, Daddy just, you know, Daddy had a good tournament, so we're going to move to a bigger house. Like it was nothing like that.
Of course.
You know, it was like Daddy could find the time between his real job to go travel and do this thing that he loves to do. And obviously it's becoming different now. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, when Wheat says this is the biggest year possible, I think people need to sit back and be really happy with that, because that's pretty freaking awesome. I've been around a long time too, not nearly as long as you, but for me to say it, sometimes I'm a little bit hyped. But when you say it, I think you have a more cool approach to it, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, for me, it's going to be looking a lot about looking forward, but we don't want to look forward quite yet, because 2011 is still here. So I came up with a bunch of questions, and you know, obviously some of these questions would have been better facilitated if everyone was here, but I still think there's some good things to sort of reflect on, to talk about. Then maybe we can open up the phone lines, do the same kind of thing as well. And you know, still pull out here in end of the year, episode 26, Inside the Game. Which, by the way, 26 episodes in itself for a show that started right back in May, you know, not too shabby. So, all right. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and start asking some of my questions. I had first and foremost, what race do you think improved the most over 2011?
I think that's a really cool question. Cause I mean, one of the fun parts for me, I actually like doing this. I really like the numbers behind the game. I think that's fascinating. One of the things TLPD does on Team Liquid is every month they release win rates for all the different races. And they do it by, like, North America and Europe and then Korea. Because a lot of people consider the Korean stats very different. Obviously,
of
their
course.
Metagame's different, their level of play, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, the race that leaps out at you that you want to say is Terran. I feel like a lot of people would say that, but I don't necessarily know that to be true. I think Terran's remained pretty consistently at worst middle of the ground, and at best the by far the most winningest race. I want to say Zerg, and here's my answer for why. Zerg, in my opinion, experienced the lowest low and close to, if not the highest high. And the reason is Zerg metagame from the beta to midpoint for StarCraft II was in shambles. A lot of Zergs, honest to God, thought you open up Roaches, then you went Hydras, and then you had to go Corruptors, and that was their entire game plan. Things like counterattacking, overexpanding, emphasis on creep spread, Mutalisk being utilized, Baneling drops, the Infestor itself,
right.
The Broodlord endgame. Like, there's so much metagame that has exploded for the Zerg race. That I feel like there was a point in time where Zergs flat out said, I cannot win ZVP. And then they would also say, and this was in part because of maps, I cannot win ZVT. There were some maps that were just flat out as terrible as they possibly could be. But as the maps started to get more figured out, and as the races started to get more figured out, I think it's Zerg that has shown that there is so many different ways they can play and be successful that they're the ones that have come the furthest. And I would love... if you had, you know, I'd love to hear your opinion. Like you said, it'd be great if we had two other guys here, but
right, exactly, because you know, of course, I say I agree with you, and then I'm just a biased Zerg player, and you know, I mean, to that regard, every single race you can look at and go, this is some of the major improvements that this race played. I mean, look at the sort of stages of Terran as you began to mention, you know, as we saw the different metagames pop up around that, even the Protoss where, you know, we went from literally Gateway Colossus, then we started getting the Stargate a little bit more, a lot more utility out of the Templars and the Archons, etc. Warp Prism being used a lot more. You know, but I do feel like as far as the most improved, there's no doubt about it, what you mentioned and like how early Zerg was played or how it was played in early 2011, I have to agree with you. While it's really easy to pick and choose things from every single race, I think overall, from games where it literally would have been just nothing but Roaches. And we still see that today, don't get me wrong.
And there's good arguments for each race. I think, I'll say this. I think there's really good arguments for Zerg or Protoss. I think Terran is a race a lot of people would have pretty mediocre arguments about, like, and that's because of the Marine Marauder medevac. That's still just a pretty good thing to do. It was in the beta and it is now, so that's kind of whitewashed their race. But Protoss, you know, some people are bringing this up in the chat. I've got this pulled up here. They're talking, I mean, good mentions could be in PvP. It used to be completely Forgate ridden, right? It was really bad in the beta, and up until a few months ago, it was still just pretty bad. It broke the matchup to the point where if you did something other than a Forgate, you were being fancy schmancy and, you know, taking a risk to a certain extent. And then also in the other matchups too, we're seeing Protoss realize that upgrades are pretty good, double forge. I remember personally, and no one's really made fun of me, right, and this is probably a good thing that Painter's not here, but he was like, the Zealot's the best unit. And I was like, the Zealot? Ah, oh, you're so stupid. Ah, oh, it's terrible, blah, blah, blah. Turns out the Zealot is a pretty freaking good unit. Yeah. So, and I mean, I think that's a Protoss realization they had too. And you could, I mean, like I said, you could make pretty good arguments for Protoss as well, I think.
That actually kind of what you ended with takes us into the next question pretty good. And that is, what unit had the biggest breakthrough in 2011?
You know, again, and I hope people don't think I'm harping on the Zerg race, but, well, there's a couple. For me, number one, it would be the Infestor. And this is going to be an answer that a lot of people don't necessarily agree with. But you need to, if you've been around since the beta, Zergs didn't use the Infestor at all. Like, at all. There was a period of time where they used the Neuroparasite because it was so outrageous that they like figured out that Neuroparasite's really good, and then they blasted it all over the place to the point where it got nerfed like a month later. That's how much they used it. But the Infestor's become the absolute backbone of Zerg race, right? You can't imagine too many ZVP EZs or ZBTs that don't have some huge function for the Infestor, right?
Right.
It just works so well in tandem with that Broodlord army. But...
Uh-oh. I might have just lost Jeff. Hello, Jeff. Hold on one second.
Burp, burp, burp.
Hold on. Yeah, we got some herp derp in there for sure. We literally heard, burp, but, burp. And then you made your point.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah, we hear you great now.
I apologize, guys. I'm on a laptop and I'm dealing with wireless internet, so I just turned off one of the streams I had going. which is the embarrassing part to answer that, but it should be okay now. It's the only stream I had going.
You finished it? Oh my gosh, come here. I'm so proud of you, dude. Hold on. Dude, Mini Wheat's first followed the instruction himself Lego creation, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
Dude, I'm impressed. That box said like 7 to 10. You proved him wrong, Mini Wheat. Good job, buddy. Good job. You're ready. You're ready for Christmas, Mini Wheat. Get out of here. All right. Achievement unlocked.
The next unit I was going to say is the Mutilus. Mm. Obviously, everyone knows about it in ZBT, and it's been pretty relevant in ZBT throughout the course of StarCraft II. But it being used now in ZBP is huge, and then also it making appearance and changing ZBZ is still, we're kind of on we're on the verge of that becoming more popular, but it's still... It went from zero to quite common. And then in ZVP, it went from like a gimmicky timing you did to this is how I play ZVP now.
And what about, which I saw chat mention here, and I agree with both of what you said. I think that the Ghost is definitely one of those units that made a breakthrough, even to the point where I remember early beta where the nuke came up in discussion. People were just like, oh, you know, it's never going to happen. And then we literally went through a series of about a month and a half where this cool, like, I'm going to use nukes defensively style came into play. It wasn't anything that necessarily developed out that we see. But we will regularly see them slip into high-level games, obviously EMP being crucial. You know, a lot of different utility that's coming up as far as that's concerned. So even if we said for the Terran, I'd have to go absolutely Ghost as one of the breakthroughs of 2011 for sure.
Ghost, big one. Yeah. People are mentioning like Hellions and Zerglings. I don't think that is in the same category because that's just a unit that was commonly used and has had its role changed. Like Zergs learned that they could counter and stuff with Zerglings, and you know, congrats to them, but that's not the same revelation as far as I'm concerned.
All right, we got a lot more of these, so we'll try to move through a couple of them a little bit quicker. This one I would have loved to ask every single person, but how much did streaming affect you as a player, a personality, a coach, etc. this year?
I think my webcam might be frozen, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Wheat, I'm not impressed with your question.
Look at my face, too. It's like, fucking. Like,
Wheat, your question sucks. There you
go. All right,
go.
Real quick, too. Someone mentioned Warp Prism, and that's actually...
Oh, of course, yeah.
A little bit of facepalm moment there. That went from zero use to it's a mainstay of high-level play, so I apologize. That's pretty big. But as far as how is important streaming in 2011, like, what a great question, by the way. Thank you for thinking of that. Like, that actually... It's just blown the way we consider gaming out of the water, right? Like, it used to be absolutely the only objection, you know, like, the only thing a player can do is win tournaments or perhaps be some kind of character, but it had to be at tournaments, right? Like, Elky wearing the Joker outfit at a poker tournament, which is, of course, not StarCraft 2 at all, but... I guess the example there is that you could do something at a tournament like that, and then people would talk about it on the forum. But now, if you're a personality on a show, if you stream, if your stream has commentary and it's got interesting, like, other pro gamers interacting, or, you know, if you make someone cry on it, or you have just, like, you can create a show in your own home, and that oftentimes can be significantly more lucrative / important than winning any one tournament. And that concept is very unique to 2011, I think.
Well, let me ask you a question to follow up to that. Because I you know, coaching was, you know, following up to streaming, coaching was like pretty big in 2010. Like, there wasn't a day go by where I couldn't watch a stream being coached, or I'd see something on Reddit. And even into 2011, this continued. But it seems like the demand has decreased slightly. So my question to you is, do you feel like coaching has taken a back seat in 2011? And then I had a follow up, is that, do you think anything else has sort of decreased this year as far as that's concerned?
Well, as to coaching, I think how much, like, there's definitely I don't know if necessarily want to call it an oversaturation of coaching, but one of the cool concepts that actually Hotbit from Team Liquid kind of alerted me to, and he wasn't talking about this coaching specifically, but he was talking about how streaming is very feast or famine. There's your White Raws, your Hucks, your Idras, your Demuslims, you know, myself, some other guys, Destiny, obviously. The list goes on. I can't name all of them, so please don't take offense to the people out there. But there's these streams that have 4,000 to 6,000, 9,000, 10,000, 12,000, 15,000, like tons and tons of people on a regular basis. But then almost every other stream after that has like 500, 600, 1,000 if they're kind of the middle of the roaders.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of people with like 1 or 200. So there's very much so a feast or famine concept going on here, and I want to cross-play that to coaching. I think there's a lot of coaches that do really well, and they get lessons every single day. They could do that full-time if they wanted, but they don't necessarily want to. And then there's a lot of coaches who don't have that much business at all. And there's different reasons for that. I don't necessarily know that coaching is moving backwards, but certainly the amount of people that talk about it is getting decreased because it's kind of become part of how we work. If people had numbers or stories, I would be, you know, interested to hear that. But like for me personally, I get inquiries every other day.
I mean, it is really interesting, too, because as you mentioned, I was going through, I was looking at some of the streams that were up, and specifically at StarCraft 2, and it was pretty much what you mentioned. You know, there's Minigun with 1,600, and there's Psy StarCraft with 1,400, which is really good for Psy StarCraft, but then you've got Desro with 800, and Artist from Rain at 600, Vibe at 400, yeah, you know, but as you go down, they're definitely lower and lower. I mean... Certainly, we've seen the audience for these types of things grow. But do you believe that it is 100% personality? Do you think that maybe some of these players should offer like more coaching, more educational type services to possibly improve themselves? I know this is a pretty hypothetical situation, but I just find it interesting.
It is. It really is. And for a lot of players, like, this is one of those things I really, you know, we've talked about this a few times, but I'll talk about it a few hundred more times because I think it's so important. The best way to describe it is I wouldn't say one thing over another is more important. What I would say is, like, look at it like it's an RPG and you have certain classifications that you can upgrade. If Bomber turns on his stream, people aren't watching that for his personality. They're watching because he's got freaking fantastic strategies, one of the best players, so that's where you're going to get people.
Right.
One of the interesting case studies that I'd love if someone in delved in is like the highest I've ever seen a Bomber stream is maybe 3,000 people, you know? So strictly skill, strictly top world-class Korean skill will get you like 2,500, 3,000. So then there's some X factors. When MC streams, he has more viewers. When 4GG streams, he can get more viewers. The reason for those kind of guys getting more viewers, even though they don't commentate, they don't do much, 4GG plays funny music, and he's kind of the buzz right now. He's one of the big name Brood War players that's making a splash right now, so everyone kind of wants to see the magic. Also, he's a Terran streamer. There's not a lot of Terran streamers. MC is a hilarious guy. He'll go on Twitter. He'll drop a couple jokes. He'll play some games. He's got girl pictures flipping up and down on stream, and he's one of the best ProDOS players, right? But then let's get away from the Korean model for a second. You've got players like a Katz who will drink on stream and be freaking hilarious. He's got great overlays. He's got great interaction with his followers. You know, people that watch a Katz stream have a very good chance of interacting with him while he's streaming.
Absolutely.
That'll get him 3,500, 4,000, 4,500 viewers. Okay, Idra announces, hey, I'm going to do some commentary while I stream in the Slayer's house. So he's in the Slayer's house. It's Idra, one of the best Zergs. And his commentary actually means he's going to bitch and moan about everybody that does anything. So then it's 15,000 people, right? 20,000 people who are waiting for the moment where Idra gets queued up against fucking, you know, Zenyo or something like that. And then it's like, oh, I'm living the dream. It's the experience of a lifetime. So the overarching idea I'm trying to say here is if I'm a mid-level pro gamer and I'm looking to make money in this game, get my name out there, and really try to get myself moving in the right direction, you have to stream, absolutely have to stream. I would get overlays. I would interact with my community, my chat, you know, the chat people and Twitter and that stuff.
Those peoples inside the chat universe.
Those electronic people.
Electronic peoples.
Probably play a little bit of music in the background, and then try to do some X factors. If you're friends with a girl who's pretty good at the game, get her on your stream and play some games. That people care about that shit. If you if you get emotional about a game, don't hold back. Fucking flip out. Within reason, you know, that kind of stuff is what's going to get you further in StarCraft 2. And then a lot of people, the traditionalists, they'll go, that's not right. You should fucking win. Like, look at InControl talking about being an interesting person when he can't win a tournament. Like, there's always that sentiment out there.
Sure.
People need to understand, in order to put yourself in a place where you can win those tournaments and get invited to those tournaments and get in positions where you're better suited to win those tournaments, you have to support yourself. You have to have the fame. And you can just win a tournament and flip that on its head. Like, you're instantly famous if, you know, Darkface 2654 wins MLG fucking Seattle next year and takes home $35,000. He's famous. Boom. That just happened. But what's more reasonable for people to expect is they get their name out there via streaming. They go to a tournament. People are talking about them. They do pretty good. They take, like, top 10. And then because they're already kind of famous, people are blowing them up, and then that grows from there.
All right. I agree with those points. And for me, obviously, I joined Twitch, right? So there's no There's no fucking secret that I think that video streaming is sort of a thing of the future. I think that, you know, players are definitely realizing, like, how to one-up their game. I think that, you know, presentation, like you said, goes a long way. Interaction, it goes a long way. And as the technology continues to improve, more ways to interact. You know, I love watching Damaga's stream because he, you know, obviously doesn't speak English, but he's got a dude that sits in there and translates everything that he says. And, like, when have I ever had that fucking opportunity? You know, like, it's just such a unique thing to get in the head of a Zerg who speaks a different language. And I think, like, that sort of accessibility is amazing. That's also one of the reasons why I feel like 2011 has been really incredible. You know, not to also shadow the whole concept of people being able to make money through that. But let's move on. Let's talk about a couple other things. What overall quote unquote thing do you think StarCraft II players improved on over the year?
What have they improved on over the year?
Yeah, like, and this thing could be like, you know, I was thinking about it, and of course it's a completely, there's no right answer, right? But is it, you know, unit control, macro, understanding, a certain trick, like, I don't know. I mean, do you think there is one overall thing that StarCraft II players just improved on over the year?
You know, I don't know if I'd ever hit the nail on the head in terms of what's the one, because nothing stands out to me that they improved on overall singularly. But I remember back to the beta, and so a lot of the complaints people had was StarCraft II was a one clash game where you built up your army, they built up their army, they attacked, and then the winner of that fight was the winner of the game. I think we've moved away from that a lot, and a big part of the reason why we have is because unit control has become much more of an emphasis, and we've also seen Warcraft 3 players really utilize that in large part to their success. But also we've seen kind of like a, and this is why I'm like kind of a bastard for answering that question. Like, I couldn't just say unit control. Like, strategy in and of itself, I think players have really developed. Like, everyone went into StarCraft II thinking that they need to do a Brood War-esque type strategy. And we're finding in StarCraft II that's less and less the case. It's a very much so different game. And we're seeing different strategies. So I don't know. I mean, what's your answer? Because I
don't know, man. I mean... I honestly don't know. Like I said, I don't know that there's a correct answer to it. I just thought it would be an interesting thing. I mean, yeah, strategy. Like, I feel like even positioning, you know, the way that people engage in battles, like you said, a one-clash battle, like we got a lot of that. Now suddenly we're starting to see, you know, more strategic battles from the Zerg as far as their flanks and, you know, better placement of units for, you know, even from Ghost to the Terran to Templar for that. I mean, just all around. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting thing to at least reflect on because there's been a lot. And that's kind of the cool thing. If you look at it, it's like, again, like, holy shit, there's been quite a few things that, that have changed. So, all right, this is kind of a big one, but maybe tough to do. But what was your favorite match of 2011, man?
Yeah. Shit. Okay. So, I did not watch the fucking apparently the best match ever, which is Dong Regu versus MMA.
It was the best match.
Game
ever.
Seven.
Yeah.
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 So, okay, so my answer might be the second best then, because I haven't watched
that. Let's say, aside from the Blizz Cup final, since that gets its own fucking award, and it really does, guys, if you haven't seen it, it was just amazing. From the way the story's been told, the fact that GSL pretty much had shitty finals all year. You know what? No one's going to remember the shitty finals. All they're going to remember is that fucking epic seven-game series from the Blizz Cup finals. So,
well, if you're gonna, I mean, if you have a good finals, it kind of makes the whole tournament. But
So anyway, go ahead.
A couple come to mind. Puma versus MC in the first NASL was one of the most epic, freaking ridiculous finals matches I've ever seen. It had the story of MC, who was kind of at the height of his, or towards the height of his dominance at that time as a Protoss player, and then Puma, who was kind of like the, he was the winner bracket winner. Nobody was really talking about him. I want to say Thorzane versus MC on Taldrum Altar from TSL comes to mind. I think actually Thorzane ends up losing that game, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that, but it's one of the most ridiculous. Like, that was when Koreans just walked all over foreigners. It just never worked out the other way. Of course, TSL kind of opened her eyes to the opposite of that, but Thorzane played out of his mind. The Cloaked Ghost walking amongst the Protoss army, sniping and EMPing was just gorgeous.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I totally agree with you on that one.
And my last pick, and I want yours pick too. So I want three out of you.
Okay? All right, well, that the one that you just said is definitely my
shit.
First one, so
we're gonna agree. The third one, and this is probably partly because I was there, but Stefano versus Kiwikaki. Everyone in that place thought Kiwikaki was trolling and just needed to get the hell out of the game because he was just dead. But then he started to work some miracles with his recalls and a couple, you know, he actually didn't vortex for the first part. He was just doing recall strategies.
Right.
And we were all kind of like, whoa. And then it still got to a point where it was like, it's still over. Like, he had like two Archons, two Stalkers, three Colossus, a Zealot, and a Sentry versus like eight Brood Lords, five Infestors. You know, it was dumb. It should have been completely over. But when he pulled off that double vortex to be in a building filled with people that then goes absolutely bonkers and the casters are like tearing, you're like, just like the whole place is going crazy. That was one of the coolest esport feelings I've ever had. I had shivers up and down. I was screaming my head off. It was one of the most magical moments I've experienced. So that definitely has to make my top three.
God, you took some, really good ones. And unfortunately, a lot of times the end of the year is often overshadowing of the beginning of the year. But as the games got better, it just makes more sense that we saw, you know, better games at the end. I've seen a couple of Stefano games, and I'm literally going to sort of clump these together as some of the best games, because I actually watched Stefano stream quite a bit, and I'm really impressed with just his play overall.
Yeah.
But I have seen Stefano in a lot of games just have the most amazing split army control that I've ever seen, like from a Zerg, period, end of story. And one of those games did happen during the IPL. And I think it was his final game versus Kiwikaki, if I'm not mistaken. It was definitely versus a Protoss, where he just had this, fighting into a choke. It was amazing game sense going in, links around, we constantly see these types of things coming out of Stefano. If you don't get a chance to watch a stream, like, try to.
I watch it every time it comes up. Yeah.
Really, amazing. So, I want to come up with one more, and you know, there's definitely I don't know. I'm gonna keep thinking about that while we keep answering questions, because I don't want to hold up the show. I'm seeing a lot of people as well. I don't know about the 91 SD Pro Brush. Idra, and for different reasons, like Idra Huck hallucinations, like, you know.
Your guys' reaction was insta-classic.
Like, you know, there's some amazing things that happen throughout the year that also kind of get honorable mention because of that. Anyway, let's move on. Let's see. Of all the events that you attended, which one will you never forget about leaving 2011? Because that it happens a lot, right? Like, you can always think it's like, oh, dude, that I went to 100 events, but I remember like five of them like I was there.
Damn. You know, like, my answer is going to be different than, you know, I think I would still have to say NASL season one. And the reason I'm saying that is because it was such a trying learning experience for me. Like, I did so many things that I would want to do differently. We worked so hard. There was this huge, like, unknown presence to it. Like, oh my God, what if the screen doesn't turn on? You know, like, what if one of the players just comes out and says, this is the stupidest tournament ever? And there's just kind of all this weird fear kind of surrounding it. For it to culminate in a great final match and to see, like, Russ just completely, like, oh, God.
Oh, shit. Hold on 1 second. Okay.
Quiet.
There you go. All right. Sorry.
I don't see him up. I can't see.
That was freaking awesome.
I don't know what we're left.
You robot a little bit there?
No.
Right at the end of your last sentences, you were talking about how awesome it was. It was almost like you went into this, like, orgasmic internet, like, orgasm about how awesome it was. And then the dog was like, ruff, ruff. You mentioned, like, the fact that it was a learning experience, the fact that, you know, like, for you, there was a lot behind it as well. But it was also one of the events that you weren't a player in, which I kind of find interesting as well.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of actually reconciled that as I was thinking about your question. I want to say that some of the MLGs, like seeing Huck win was really, I got teary eyed there. Seeing Puma overcome Hero in some ridiculous matches, that was really cool. It's actually the Muslim Abbey behind me. You guys are dressed like pansies, by the way. It's like 50 degrees out there.
Muslim.
The Muslim looks like he just got back from the Arctic Circle. It's frigid out there. It's really cold.
Bugger.
All the snapdragons and icicles. But I don't know. Yeah, for me, it's NESL for that event. And Idra just logged on Skype. Have you been talking to him at all?
No, I haven't.
Well, I would love to hear their answer because that it would be almost specifically a player. But that's me, man. NESL.
Right on. Let me see if. Let me just put. Oops. That doesn't help there. Let me see. For me, as far as event, the one that I definitely won't forget, Anaheim was pretty magical just in terms of the number of people that were there, the buzz. The Muslim had blood running all over, you know, his arm, like, before the event even started.
That event was important too because people don't realize this, but MLG went to the West Coast and actually had a terrible experience. Like, not a lot of people came out, so they actually kind of shunned the West Coast for a couple of years, from what I understand. So for them to have a really successful MLG at Anaheim means that 2012 and onward, hopefully, they're going to have more MLGs over there. That was a really important one.
Yep. We'll come back to that question if we do happen to get on. I'm not getting. Greg may have just literally woke up, so we'll see what happens. Let's see, which player and or community member, or maybe one of each, did you meet this year that surprised you? I think I lost Jeff again. Bloop. For me, I think that a player I met that surprised me would have to be Violet. Just a totally awesome guy, totally, like, sweet Korean dude. Super disciplined. Like, he knows what he wants. He really wants to be a part of the Western StarCraft scene, and he just really impressed me overall. But as far as community member is concerned, like, Orb, hands down, has my vote. I think he's awesome. I hope that I get to work with Orb more in the future. It's Stefano too. Stefano's like a really great kid as well. Well, here it is, me and all alone. There you go. In Control is nothing more than a Skype. I'm just going to leave it like this. I'm going to open up the phone lines. It's like, whatever. Idris not here. Dude, Orb is awesome. Really. Forever a wheat. Forever alone. What's so funny, Jen? Shit. You could call us at DJ Wheat telephone 909-581-8519. We're going to just take calls, whatever we want to chat about. Let's take this first one. We got Travell on the line. What's up, man? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Yo, my name is Marquise, and every single time I try to play StarCraft, my daddy goes, no, you can't play StarCraft.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. I think you're actually looking for the radio station. Maybe they'd be more interested in your 13-year-old hijinks, something like that. Let's take this one. Let's take Jordan's call. Jordan, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
It's going, man.
I wanted to just call in and give you a success story from, the 2011 year.
Okay.
Because I went to MLG. I sat by your plane, actually. I don't know if you remember that or not. But,
yeah.
Well, that event with my dad actually sparked, this eSports StarCraft movement in, my family and circle of friends.
Yeah, so let me rewind 1 second, right? So this was at PAX, right? Or, no, I'm sorry, not PAX. I mean Anaheim.
Yeah, this is Anaheim. I'm on the way back.
Right. So on the way back, I actually sat next to Jordan and his dad as they were heading back from the same event. So anyway, we chatted. I thought it was really cool that your dad was into it. So what did it do exactly?
It legitimized it to an extent where this wasn't a stupid hobby that I spent too much time doing. This wasn't just another game that'll be gone and a week, this was a thing to me. This was the same thing as the kid who plays basketball all day hoping to be really good. This was Jordan playing StarCraft to be really good. This was people do this to be legit, people do this because this is a passion they have. And the entire weekend it was kind of a really cool, really beautiful irony because the entire event, you and Sean, I think, were on the main stage and Dane Island were the faces of the event for him. So when we got on the plane, he's like, is that guy that was on the TV the entire time? And I was like, yeah, that's it. And that legitimized the whole thing for him to be able to sit and be around and hear conversation from the person that was essentially talking at him the whole weekend. And then, that was really cool. So I just kind of wanted to, 2011 rather was great for esports in my neck of the woods.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I think that's kick-ass, and I'm sure there's other people out there that have the same sort of, my brother got into it, or finally my girlfriend after asking me for so long, or I still get emails every day about Mini Wheat videos got my chick into StarCraft too. I'm like, dude, that's awesome. So family movement definitely has been happening, and I appreciate your call, Jordan.
Yeah, no, thanks for taking it, man. Yep. You have a good day. Okay?
You too, man. Peace out. Bye-bye. All right, let's take another call. Let's take area code 727. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, actually, I wanted to comment on the question. I went to MLG Providence. I live in Florida, so that was a big stretch for me. And I actually had a really good time because I got to hang out with all the EG members because one of my friends is a manager, and I just wanted to say that was really special, because they really are the nicest guys, and the community is it's so different from what I expected it to be.
What did you expect it to be? Because this is a good perspective.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the Counter-Strike community, so it was very, they're very cutthroat. They beat you down when they can, and it's just a really awkward experience being on LAN, but everyone there just embraces. They're just so supportive, and there's no negativity, and it's really rare to find that in gaming, I guess I should say.
I mean, I agree with you. It is pretty damn rare to find, and you're right. It's one of the things that absolutely has drawn me towards the StarCraft community, even since Brood War. I mean, the collective that was Team Liquid did not happen overnight. That was that was an environment and a community that was created over years of sort of having a dedicated passion to the game. And the fact that they opened that up and sort of let that community seep out and sort of become infectious across the entire the entire community is pretty awesome. I mean, obviously there's still the dark side of the community. Let's
obviously, but I mean, it's just on a broader scale. It was so much like a sigh of relief. It was like, cause you know, when you think these guys are going to be stuck up pricks, and it's just, you come out and you're like, holy shit.
Right.
That was one of the best weekends of my life.
Yep. And I think, you know, I mean, I definitely came home a bunch from, this year and said, God, that was probably one of the best weekends of my life. I mean, great games, got to cast. It's pretty much dream come true over and over. So I appreciate your call, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, I just got an update from Jeff, as I was not rudely. He says, house blew a fuse and is now without internet. So we'll continue. So normally I bring him on at the end of the show, but I'm like, what the hell, I'm going to bring him on now. Goatlust, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, g'day, mate, how are you?
Well, it's just me, and I'm doing pretty good, considering, so.
Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah, not a whole lot. Just sort of chilling here.
Yeah.
I was expecting a little bit more, but,
I know. I do not know what happened. Yeah, my disappointment is shared. So, what do you got for me this week? Just me.
Well, I just want to know, what do you think was the most memorable moment of your entire year? Like, just one moment could be anything.
Well, definitely... Idra GGing out of that MMA game will probably be something that I will have infused in my brain forever. I still this day just don't get it. I don't get it. And I think that affected the rest of his tournament. And for me, that moment just sticks out. And I know it's not like it wasn't the amazing win that came from so-and-so, but, you know, it was probably that. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of other small, just sort of memorable moments that I absolutely will take out of this year. You know, just the amount of people that I got to meet and interact with alone. Getting to you know, introduce my wife to Marin King Prime, her favorite player, and hanging out with MKP and stuff. You know, like, these are things that I will never, ever forget. But forever I will see the horrible GG that happened amidst that game. And that for me will just, I'll never forget it, man, ever.
Well, I've tried to forget it myself as an Idra fan.
It doesn't work very well. It doesn't. What about you?
Well, I got to say, the one thing that stuck out to me over this whole year was, you know how some people sort of accuse casters of, you know, not really being passionate about the game, just sort of coming into it from a career standpoint, that sort of thing. Of course, you'd be familiar with that.
Sure.
Well, the thing for me was after that Idra 3-0-ing Puma at IEM Guangzhou, just seeing how hyped Mr. Bitters was after that series, and like how he had Greg up there for the interview, and he just like hugged him. He was like so hyped about it.
It was just unreal.
That was the moment of the year for me, I've got to say.
Goalless, you bring up an interesting point too, is that I've seen this actually quite a few times over the past month or so, where like people really like to accuse casters of faking enthusiasm. And I can tell you that I feel like I can really, really, really see right through that shit. And I'm not sure that there's one person that I casted with this year, and I've, of course, like, that's probably like really rough, but in all the majors that I casted, I can tell you that I definitely did not cast with anyone who fakes enthusiasm. That every single person that I had the honor of casting with, the Day Nines, the Apollos, the Mr. Bitters, the Orbs, the Huskies, that these guys are 150% passionate. I mean, Apollo and I, like, that was probably one of the most interesting ones for me, right? Because I had never cast with Apollo. I'd only watched him. But Paul and I really clicked, and we casted, and then what would we do? We'd go have breakfast in the morning. We'd be like, oh, my God, I'm so excited to see this match. We'd talk about all the things that could possibly happen and blah, blah, blah. And, like, all we did for that whole trip was basically, you know, talk StarCraft. Like, that was it. It was awesome. It was amazing. And if there's one thing that bugs me, it's reading those types of comments, because I'm like, dude, if you could, like, talk with any of these guys or me or anyone for 10 minutes, you would see, like, I come off of cast and I have to be calmed down because my heart will be beating so fast and I will be getting excited, you know, because of the story that's being told and because of the talent that I'm getting to see. And I think it degrades just that level of passion when people say that kind of stupid bullshit. So I affirm what you say. And, you know, a lot of times it just comes down to, like, seeing that true emotional moment or like, feeling that through the caster. Like, absolutely. I mean, there have literally been moments where I have been, like, you know, not, like, speechless. Well, I have been speechless this year. I just talked about it. But where literally I have been almost, you know, I've had to try to hide emotions broadcasting because of how, like, excited I was. It doesn't happen very often, man. It really doesn't. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta say, like, I from my perspective, I'm a pretty picky guy about my casters and stuff, and I wasn't really sold on Bitter up until that point, and then I saw that, and that sort of passion, it's just such a force to get you into the game.
Right.
And, yeah, it was just an incredible moment.
Right. Well, Goatless, it's been a great year, dude. Thank you for all your calls, yeah, man. Appreciate it. We'll see you 2012.
Yeah, all see right. you then, man.
Peace. Bye. Word. All right. I'll take another call here. Let's take Treetop. Treetop, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
How's it going, Lee?
It's going good, man. How are you?
Going well. Thanks for taking the call, first of all. As we're kind of doing a year in reflection, I'm going to kind of take a little bit of a step away from, you know, all the big major tournament wins and all of that stuff, because, you know, all that stuff will be talked about endlessly by everyone.
Sure.
But one of the most fun times that I've had watching StarCraft, and I've never been able to make it to an event or anything, but, and at the risk of sounding like a total kiss ass, the Kings of Tin episode where you had Mr. Bitter on and he was just absolutely smashed and just talking the most crazy amount of shit in the entire world. Like, that was so entertaining, and through the whole show, I was just completely laughing my ass off so much.
Awesome.
And I watched the VODs of it. It was great.
Awesome. I'm glad that you enjoyed it, man.
Yeah, it's such an awesome idea for a show, just to fuck around, get smashed, and have someone cool like Mr. Bitter on, who'll just totally go crazy with it and
all out. But I agree, and you know what? Like, it's really cool because every show is never what I expect it to be, right? Some of the guys, like, a great example, I love the LZ Gamer episode as well, because you expect LZ Gamer to be totally, you know, just kind of like chill. And dude, he is a hard ass. He was all over my shit the entire episode. And I was like, dude, I loved it. It was so great. So, yeah, Mr. Bitter is an absolute hoot. We just had, of course, the Bitter Dam combo on as well, which was just a fucking blast.
Dang, I missed that one.
Yeah, that was on last night. So if you like the Mr. Bitter episode, you are going to love last night's episode, dude.
After the show, that's right where I'm going.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks for your call, Treetop.
Thanks a lot, Wheat.
Peace out. Bye.
Later.
All right. We're going to have the King of StarCraft on. Oh, wait. What the fuck? I did not. What? Apparently, I called him back. Yo, what's up?
Yo, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You're not still on air, are you?
Yes, this is the final segment of the show.
So the final segment of your show is actually live on Inside the Game as well.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, this is probably the first time this has ever been done, so we're making history here.
We need to make this happen more often. I feel like I need to get the webcam on. He'll give me that shit. Give me the webcam. I'm gonna plug this in.
It's like Inception. Yeah, Streamception right now. Like, what is going on? Hey, Slasher. You know what? And if people have listened into the show live on 3 Inside Game, whatever, you know, you guys have probably heard me rag on Slasher here and there, but I got to tell you, like, Slasher's one of the hardest working dudes in the industry. He's been a good buddy for many, many years, and I was very sad to hear that your show was no longer going to be on. Look at that. We even got I should have added you on the other side, but I guess I could just bring you on, like, I don't care, so.
Yo, why not? I'm sorry, I'm probably ruining a very tense discussion.
Actually, you want to know how tense it is? Jeff was the only guy on, and a fuse in the house blew, and now he has no internet. So it's literally, it's me, the noodle girl, the Inside the Game guy, the broken Skype window that's Jeff, and then you. This
and
is
me?
What, this is.
Yes! So I am helping you. This is great. I see it always coming through in the clutch, Wheat.
Yeah.
That's so I wanted to call you out of everyone to really end my show because much like Carmack was someone who I looked up to for a very long time in terms of journalism and writing and getting into the scene and doing articles and coverage, you are pretty much the guy that I have been watching on my screen and listening to in my Winamp audio since probably 2000, 2001, and you are my inspiration for broadcasting. Wow. I pretty much ripped off Live on 3 in the show that's made for this show. I pretty much do it the exact same way, and I thought that I really wanted to thank you and everything that you've done and helped me along the way, and really giving me... you know, the inspiration and movement to do this show and to make it as good as I could be for esports.
Wow. Thanks, dude. Thanks. I just hope you learned one thing from it.
What's that?
How fucking hard production is.
Actually, I know it's cyanide on a daily basis. So
all right, well, hopefully whipped you into shape.
So. I've learned almost nothing.
Oh, why does that not surprise me?
Oh, I don't know.
I know. So, well, you know what, though? Even though it may be your last show at Fuck Slasher, we'll be able to see you live tomorrow on Live on 3 on One More Game, right?
Yep.
All right, awesome.
Yes, we will.
So wait.
What
about, let me ask you one of my questions from my, from the 2011. Okay. All right, here we go. Here's your question, Slasher. This is such a good one. If I gave you $5 million, which league / organization that is not MLG would you give it to in 2012?
Ooh. Which league organization would I give it to? Does this include teams, too?
Sure, yes.
Does this include, like, websites?
Oops. Yes.
I think I lucked out on that last yes, making this an easier answer.
Okay.
I would give it to ESFI.
Okay. Incorrect. The correct answer was Gus.
Oh!
No, I'm just kidding. No,
you're so right. Like, Gus, everyone, we need to have a charity drive for Gus. He's out some money right now, and the Philippines are hurting.
All right, ESFI. ESFI. All right, let me do one more.
I grew up on independent journalism for ES Reality and for Gotfrag and for SK Gaming, even though it's not so independent, you could argue. And I like what they're doing, and I think I would like to fund journalists more than anything else right now.
Okay.
And so that's the answer that I like, and it doesn't get me killed.
And it won't get you killed. All right, finally, what was your favorite celebration this year in StarCraft II? Or actually overall, because you're a follower of many other fighting games as well.
Oh, man. Favorite Murloc? That is the MC Murloc is really high up there.
It's pretty good.
It's really high up there.
I feel like
I feel like as good as maybe you know what?
Actually,
no,
actually,
no.
The Natty thumbs down.
No, look, the Natty Wall was, huh?
No.
Yes, as it is said in my ear by Cyanide, you stole my pick. The greatest celebration of the year is Punko over Daigo.
Punko over Daigo.
Punko over Daigo, the drinking of the Red Bull.
Sure, okay.
The half awkward, like throwing it up in the air, like switching around, like beating him and perfecting him to win, and then getting like hoisted up in the air, holding the Korean flag in front of everyone. That's really never been done for Korea at a major event. It's got to be Punko. And I would say Murloc comes in at number two.
All right.
And I would say Naniwa's awkward thumbs down is a good.
That one might be the worst, man.
Good third. That's the worst.
I was just gonna show the one that you were just talking about here.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna try to. Yo, sign up. Where's my video? Play that video. Go find it.
What video?
Oh, we're also playing the. The Daigo Punko. Yeah. We can be double production. This is how we gotta do things. We show into show. Like, why not?
Yes. Gotta do more of that. Punko's freaking out. Alright, word. I don't have any more questions for you, man.
No, and I have nothing else to say, and now I am going to pretty much end the show.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Alright, Wee. All right.
Peace.
Thank you,
Wee. Good luck, man. Good luck. Peace. Fuck Slasher. All right, let's take a couple more calls, and then we'll close things up. We got area code 513 online. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. I've tried to call on every week and just now reach in, so it feels good.
Congratulations. I wish I had three more hosts to grace you with.
That's okay. I have kind of two questions, but I'll ask one, see how it goes. What I want to ask is kind of regarding the trend in the StarCraft II pro scene.
Okay.
You have players like Huck that did really well, like in Korea, you know, and so he started doing all these foreign tournaments and did really well, won a couple of them. A couple other players have done the same. And it looks like that when one player does really well in a main tournament, mainly like GSL, they will go to a foreign tournament and may do well in one or two or a couple of them, and then when they go back to their main scene, they don't do so well. So the question I want to ask is, what is your opinion on seeing if that trend may follow through to the 2012 season? Because like we saw MVP and NetSK were doing really well, you know, in like GSL, and they did pretty decent in the foreign scene, and now we have, you know, other players that are winning GSL or the Blizzard Cup.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of factors that go into it, and I think one of the largest lessons that our top players of sort of this year learned is that travel will affect your results. And I would say that probably one of the number one reasons why we lacked consistency across the board for anyone. I mean, really, like, yeah, we had a couple repeats and some guys had some amazing runs. And obviously we saw a lot of the same people continue to sort of break out. But there's no doubt that a lack of consistency had a lot to do with just the amount of travel that some of these guys took on. Keep in mind, like, you know, you've got a guy like Jakshi who wasn't traveling all around the country or all around the world. He was very focused in improving his game and playing a strict set of partners and preparing for opponents and look at the success that brought him. So there's almost like two different types of successes that we saw, right? We saw, like you mentioned, the win the GSL and maybe win a couple other competitions. We saw a lot of international success, even from some guys that couldn't win GSL, so they went on the international circuit. So there's definitely like two types of being prepared and then success as far as that's concerned.
That's kind of the point I'm getting at. Like, you know, when one player was focused on one specific tournament, you know, they were practicing a lot, and they posted great results. and then when they're traveling, their results kind of deferred, and that's, from my perspective, you know, a lot partly due to the aspect of training, how they practice. Like, for instance, we saw Naniwa, who did, you know, D1 MLG, did really well in the TSL, and after a while, he decided that he was going to focus on Eastern Providence or the global invitation altogether. And he took like 2 or 3 months just to straight practice.
Right.
And he goes and he wins it, you know?
Right.
So it's just something I want to say, like, in the trend of, is it going to happen to where a player does really well? Like, you know, let's say Jakshi does really well or Forge D does really well in the 2012 season. And, you know, for GSL, will his team or will they become interested in being moved around to these foreign tournaments and then kind of dip off because of those problems? Or are players going to really take what problems they had for this 2011 season and just sit and really practice on specific tournaments?
I think that we're going to see more focus on specific tournaments. You know, already we're going to see that Idra right now, not sure if he wants to go to Home Story Cup. You know, last year he would have gone. Like, he would have just gone. He did go, I think. But, yeah, you know, like, whatever the tournament was, last year he would have gone. Already you're seeing these guys go, you know what? Staying grounded in Korea, that's going to be better. That's going to be better for me in the long run. So, you know, I think that it's going to take us halfway through 2012 before we can even answer your question. That's what I feel.
I would agree with that, because we would have to really see how, you know, the current players or these new up-and-comers really do for the 2012 season. But, I mean, you know, look what all happened in just this year alone.
Right.
Going from, you know, the start of the end of the open GSL tournaments to the major GSL tournaments and going through major amounts of foreign tournaments.
So, I mean, much.
The scene explodes. It absolutely exploded.
Absolutely. It's only going
to
keep...
I just think that was kind of an interesting question to ask. See what, you know, your perspective would be on that. What players would do.
Well, I guess time will tell, and I definitely feel like we'll see players picking and choosing a little bit more. So thank you for your call, sir. Have a good one.
Oh, not a problem. You have a good one.
All right, let's take this next one. We've got Basil Foreskin on the line. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, I had a question about Naniwa.
Okay, what's up?
Do you think it's fair for people to be so hard on him given his condition?
When you say his condition, what do you mean?
Well, his autism.
Do you think that people are actually hard on him because of his autism, or do you think that people...
No, I mean, I'm saying, like, is it fair for people to be so hard on someone that has autism? Like, don't you think he deserves, like, a different set of, like, conditions, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I mean... Yes and no, because I feel like, you know, obviously I don't feel like anyone is necessarily being demeaning to him because of, you know, because of any condition he might have, or anyone for that matter. But at the same time, I mean, you are the product of sort of your own actions. So it's hard to say. I mean,
like, what I'm trying to say is that, like, when people are, like, critiquing him so much for, like, his actions, like, should they take into consideration?
Is it actually, like, is this, like, I mean, I've heard people say that Naniwa has autism, but I've never actually, like, had a doctor say, yes, I can confirm that the diagnosis that, I mean, well, are you just, like...
No, I remember a few months ago, I was reading, like, this little biography thing of him on Reddit, like, before, like, a tournament he was going to be in, and it mentioned that he was, like, the only known, StarCraft 2 pro gamer that has autism. So, I mean,
I still feel like, All right. I just don't know. I don't even know if I can necessarily take it seriously, because I don't know for sure. And I think maybe it'd be more disrespectful to comment on it without actually knowing.
All right, that's fair, I guess.
Yeah. So,
all right, well, I mean,
I appreciate your call, though.
All right, thank you.
Take care, man. Good game yesterday, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Let's take another caller. We got area code 952 on the line.
Hey, I was wondering, this is a question from a while back, and also now, I'm not sure if you've heard of the player named Last Shadow.
Yes.
Okay, so he's currently living in the Gome House, and I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago that he was caught hacking using custom maps that gave him an advantage.
Right.
Do you think that Gome should care that he was map hacking in a major tournament like the TSL? And do you think the fans should bother Gome about it?
I think that frankly, Gome does not want to be a police station. And so that becomes a very, very hard place to be in, right? They only want to police what happens under their own house. Gome doesn't want to be the police for everyone else. So, like, should they also be looking into Major because someone said Major was once met? You know, like, I don't necessarily feel like unless a player has... I mean, I'm sure there's probably like specific, right? There's probably specific instances, but no, I do not fully feel like Gome would need to police something like that.
Okay, thanks for the answer.
Yep.
Have a good night.
Yep, bye. I think that's pretty simple, right? Area code 616. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up?
What is up? How are you?
Hey. So I had a question. This is about kind of looking forward to 2012.
Okay.
So I'm not, I don't have a whole lot of time, and the time that I do spend devoted to StarCraft, you know, I actually play a lot. So looking forward to 2012, how can a person like me who wants to spend a lot of their time improving themselves, how can they kind of help out esports? Because I know a lot of people depend on stream revenue to support themselves, or, you know, tournaments go off stream numbers and stuff.
Right.
And if you can't spend a whole lot of time watching this kind of stuff, how can you, you know, kind of contribute and kind of still support things?
Are you asking, like, how you get better, or?
No, I'm asking how a person who's going to spend a lot of their time playing can still support, like, players and tournaments without always watching things, because I can't watch, you know, Jeff's stream all the time, but, you know, I still think he's a great player. How can I support someone like him or a tournament like MLG, even though I don't have the time to watch that because I'm focusing mainly on playing?
I see. I don't know. That's a good question. I think, honestly, the